My name is Trevor Melam. I had a group of a network for estate agents. We had 650 estate agents around the UK on board. The system we run was what's called a MLS, a multi-list system that allows agents to co-broker. So I, for about 10 years, would go up to Westminster every month, every other month, and get involved in white papers on property fraud and money laundering. So when Lloyds did what they did to me and my company, what they did to me when I started analysing it was really part of what I used to do as a day job, which was looking at fraud and money laundering. So I had contributions to regulation guidance in the third, fourth money laundering directives. And I would be one of those guys that would go in some of the government buildings and you wouldn't really know who they were, and so on. So one of the bits I had input into was one of the trading standards papers, and that's still going with a few revisions, and that's about guidance on property sales, which was about CPRs, BPRs, consumer protection regulation and business protection regulation, and matters about fraud and so on. So we would have to look at how estate agents, etc., run. And when government bring out new legislation from bills, etc., you then get regulation. And then the agents have to have compliance, they have to have training, and the whole thing has to marry up. So occasionally, on some of these consultations, government would suggest something and it wouldn't work, because there'd be another bit of legislation or regulation that would say you've got to do it this way. And if you did it the way they were proposing, you'd be damned if you did and damned if you didn't. So that was it mainly. But the company that I had was INEA, the Independent Network of Estate Agents. The projections on it were 40 to 60 million per annum. We were at a stage, we were a lot earlier stage, that was based on reaching 11,000 estate agents. But we became victims of fraud by Lloyds Bank, the BSU unit down at Bristol.
Yeah, can you say, can you explain what, you know, to what extent or what happened exactly? Because I think when you say fraud, that could be all sorts of different things that they've done. I know that there's a review as alleged a major fraud at Lloyds Bristol unit that they were committing there, and so it shouldn't be surprising to people that that there may have been fraud, but what happened to your business and how did it affect you? What did Lloyds do and what was the effect of their actions?
So what Lloyds did to us, they did something I was very familiar with, which is bait and switch. And what Lloyds do, they would approach customers that were typically asset rich. We had a portfolio of 9-10 properties and we were building INEA. And Lloyds said we'd be applicable for the EFG loan, which is the Enterprise Finance Guarantee, of which the government is supposed to back a lot of it and so on. So we had to put plans in for Lloyds. They approached us, not the other way. We were looking for backing at the time to expand it. And we had an exceptionally good board lined up. We had one of the Rightmove co-founders. We had one of the very top prop tech guys from America that was going to come back to the UK. His wife was born over here. He was going to go to Brighton. And my IT was being developed in a little area just outside Hastings. So yeah, so Lloyds did bait and switch. So they offered us 200,000 funding, and that would have taken us a bit further forward. But at 85,000, they pulled the rug. And what they've done at that point, they will have secured charges at land registry and so on. Charges that, by the way, they don't update. So much like having a car road tax disc, if you brought a car road tax disc when we used to have them and you photocopied it and put the copy in your window and cashed in the original, then what you would have in your window would be a fraudulent instrument. And that's what Lloyds Bank do. They place charges, originators charges, in many of the cases that I know of. I dare say they've got some that are true. And what they then do is pull the rug. and then they go after people with very big vulture lawyers and barristers. I've faced as a litigant in person, so no lawyers. I've faced Lloyds in court 13 times. I've gone up against 3 of their barristers and about 10 of their lawyers. And one lot of their lawyers, after 20 months, they either resigned or got sacked, because that's exactly what we discovered. We discovered that they didn't have the paperwork for one of the loans they confessed to have done. We also found that in the background, in shadow banking, they raised $250K against us, and we only got 85,000 of it. And this is quite typical. The things that Lloyds are doing, you say about fraud, and yeah, people don't always understand fraud, but what they're doing is something called the 2006 Fraud Act breaches, abuse of position, etc., etc. They're doing forged documents. So you've got the forgery and counterfeiting Act 1981. You've then got conspiracy to defraud. You've got the 1968 Theft Act, and you've got the bait and switch. And there's a few other bits you could throw in there.
Who stands to benefit? Is it just Lloyds, or is it your potential competition doing this estate agent business?
Well, one of the things that Lloyds had done, they'd invested through LDC, which, by the way, Marvin, your mayor in Bristol, is also in a partnership with LDC. But through LDC, they'd invested in a thing called Property Software Group. What I heard from their former sales director was that Lloyds were tapping into consumer data. And when I reported this to Lloyds Bank, they got very nasty with me. I elevated it through my local area directors. And then I took it to Lloyds head office, to the CEO, Antonio Hortrosorio. And things got very difficult from that point. But, you know, and eventually we had let the business go down, and then it's become a full-time job fighting Lloyds. But using my background, we've been plotting the information. We've now got 2 very comprehensive documents. I do it with a team of other experts, so we've got other people that advise on fraud. We've got a forensic accountant. He's actually just been involved in the case where the Law Lords found against Commercial First, which is Lloyds had interest in, along with Acorn Finance. But we've also got ex-CID police officers on board. We've got ex-bankers on board, including a banking professor. We work quite close with the Police Crime Commissioner, Anthony Stansfield, who's a good guy. And we also work with people such as lawyers that take down police and that sort of thing.
Well, yeah, but it's all very well, but at least one of the allegations that some people on your victims group have been alleging is that Lloyds have serving police, helping them.
That's right. I mean, our investigations this end show that the report that was done, the report was released to me by Nick Johns, who dealt with, he was the senior officer at the end on Operation Hornet. And it's quite amazing that there's still £600 million is missing. When we did the protest for an investigation, an external investigation into Sue Mount Stephen's work, into Andy Marsh, into their economic crime unit, because they are doing fraud. My background is looking at fraud. I know what they're doing. And I've looked at many of the cases. And what happened was, I put enough evidence in from a banking professor, forensic accountant and others. You'd have to be an idiot not to see it. And anyway, it came back that there wasn't, in the police's eyes, fraud on any of the 11 cases in what's called Op Meadow. And I asked for my evidence back, and I asked for a letter from Nick Johns, who'd been the overseeing officer from Thames Valley. And he looked into Op Meadow, and I couldn't believe it. I then got an email, which I asked from him, to say, you know, can you confirm that I can have my evidence back? Can you confirm what was given to you is what I'm getting back from you, from Avon Somerset? So he did that. I then had a package turn up, and I opened it, and in the bottom of it were 33 pages of police notes. And when I started reading it, I knew many of these cases, and I could see that a lot of the facts were factually incorrect, and that bits have been left out, bits have been twisted, and so on. So I was asked for the report back, because obviously I shouldn't have had it. I'm probably the worst Lloyd's victim that could have got it. And I said, no, you're not having it back. You're not having it back yet. You can have it in a month. And I said to Anthony Stansfield, I've returned my findings to him. So I started deconstructing the cases. I spoke to many of the other victims and asked them for evidence. We broke down each paragraph of Nick John's findings, and we did it much as you would for a court case. And I said to the other victims, you know, paragraph one, do you agree with it? Do you not agree with it? If you don't agree with it, why? Or is it neutral? So I did that with a lot of the victims, and there were many facts missed out. I mean, one of them, he said the fraud was handled in America by the FBI, so it's nothing to do with over here. When I spoke to the person that was involved, they were sold the service and product in Manchester as an offshoot to Lloyd's H boss in St. James Place in London, which includes, which was run at the time by people like Crosby, who never went down for Operation Hornet. Some would say he got off the hook. And when you reconstructed these cases, you could see that Nick Johns had totally whitewashed and fabricated it. I run it past some police that I know, and they agreed with me, and they gave me their thoughts too. So what we know is that the review that was done, and it was supposed to be a full-blown external investigation, and what Mount Stevens, Andy Marsh and John Smith like doing is taking control of things. And what they did with this, they took control. They knew we weren't going away. And instead of doing what we asked for and what they led us to believe they were doing, i.e. an external investigation, they tainted it. They took control. They set the scoping for it. And they basically made it so it would come out that nothing had been found. But when you reconstruct it the way it should be, there's fraud. And that is quite nicely backed up with the recent Wood versus Commercial First. Commercial First, UK Acorn, they're the earlier frauds. It's where Lloyd's learnt its trade from, I think. They had an interest in both. And the announcement was made on the 31st of March. And three law lords found that there was bribery and fraud. So these are cases, two of the cases that we've now got in the Otmeadow rebuttal, where we've got paperwork here where the ECU, the Economic Crime Unit in Avon, Somerset, said, oh, there's not enough evidence, there's no fraud. Well, maybe they were thick, maybe they didn't open their eyes, but thank goodness that three law lords have actually looked at it properly and said, yeah, it's bribery and it's fraud.
What's the implication of this ruling by the law lords?
I would imagine that Mrs. Mount Stevens will probably want to get away from Avon and Somerset or the UK as quick as she can. And I guess the same would be for Andy Marsh, because under them and prior chiefs, it's now been proved that these frauds have agonised victims for all these years. We've now got law lords saying, yeah, it's fraud, it's bribery. And the same modus operandi has been used. There's a variety. So in the cases of a lot of the earlier farmers, they would be promised, I'll just say Mr. Phillips and a certain solicitor that would work where Mr. John Smith was working. And these people typically would be promised short bridging funding that would turn into proper loans at proper rates. And typically what would happen is that it wouldn't. And what they'd be stuck with would be high interest rates. They wouldn't get all the funding. And the clever bit is, or the evil bit, is that what was then happening was that the farms and so on would then be split up. So you perhaps, if you had a farm with a normal mortgage on it, that was regulated, the title would then possibly divide into two or three. The land and the yard, for instance, example, would become unregulated lending, and the funding wouldn't fully come through on the loan. And what would happen? People would struggle, they would collapse. And the LPA receivers, people like Nick Bird, Alder King, etc. Alder King is more later with BSU, but they would then step in and say, well, you've defaulted, and then take the bits.
Okay, so how many victims and how much money in total are we talking about?
Over the years, I mean, we've got cases here that go back to the 1990s. There's cases like, you know, poor Terry King, who died of cancer. So he suffered and suffered and then went out like that, all because these evil people think they're clever. You know, I mean, part of it is this goes up very, very high. I mean, part of the big, big problem is that it also involves the City of London in the Square Mile. And I've got paperwork here that shows that Alistair Darling pretty much handed over on a plate the ability to regulate and govern financial services, the audit services and the legal services. And that happened sort of 2008, 2009. And also when the banks were in difficulty because of a lot of investment bankers playing hard and fast and loose. And Alistair Darling shouldn't have done that. There's a thing.
I mean, in a way, Trevor, the regulators shouldn't really matter. If someone's committing a crime, then the police would have to maybe, even at 3 a.m. in the morning, bash down someone's door, come and arrest them and search them for a criminal act. It doesn't. The regulators wouldn't even need to be involved.
3 a.m. in the morning. Well, try 30 years and they can't do it. The thing is, the regulators, it's smoke and mirrors. So what's happened is that Parliament, if you look at history, there's 1688, King Charles leaves England, not very popular. And the barons, the lords and the bishops, they ask William and Mary to invade us. And it's probably one of the most peaceful invasions. And they come from Holland and they invade England and they take over the monarchy. Charles then goes, he's gone to France, not very popular. And they don't get the sovereign, though. So Charles could say, I want your property. I want this, that. I want your daughter. I want your son. And what the British people got fed up with was that, you know, this hierarchy that was taking the mickey. So there was a thing called the Bill of Rights, which was introduced in 1689. And if you look up William and Mary and look at paintings and so on, you'll see they're being handed something to sign. And that is the Bill of Rights. And what that says is that they can be the monarchs, but they can't be sovereign. So Parliament becomes sovereign. It's the highest court in the land. It's common law. In the 12, 1300s, there was two main areas of law. One was civil law, Roman law in the Square Mile, and the other was Westminster, because obviously London is divided into various cities, but the City of London Square Mile was Roman law, civil law, and a lot of the lawyers got out. They moved to Holborn and they practiced there, and then they would, their court would be in Westminster, and that would be common law. And what's happened is that the legalese system, the bankers, the lawyers have hijacked and put in place legalese and don't really deal with common law. So when people are put into a banking agreement, a loan, banks don't lend on the whole, they sell debt. So you sign a promissory note. When you sign that, it's all geared that if there's a default, then, you know, they're going to win. They're going to put you in their courts. But what Alistair Darling did, he handed over the governance of financial services, legal services, auditing to the same guys who lost the plot in the crash. And what they did, they set up Quango regulators. So there was the FSA, that then went and it became the FCA and the PRA and so on. I think Dr. Andrew Bailey knows an awful lot more. But that's basically what's happened. And you've also got a thing called separation of powers, and which is judiciary, civil servants, and parliament. And parliament is supposed to be supreme and sovereign. And what they've done, like I say, Alistair Darling has handed over powers. So what has happened, the banks have been offering people money. There was a thing called the Asset Protection Scheme, which was the big funds that the banks got bailed out on. And the banks in that deal were supposed to release a lot of the money to SMEs, small, medium enterprise, and that didn't happen. The banks kept on to the money. The banks would then part lend to people and bait them in on contracts that if there were default, and typically what would then happen, the money wouldn't come through and people would be too far to return back. And they, you know, they couldn't move forward, they couldn't move back. And then what the banks do, they step in, they conceal paperwork. It's basically a Ponzi. I call it Ponzi Plus, because what they're doing, they will then manipulate the valuation of the property below its value. And they will run up big fees in the background. And when they do that, people find it very hard to fight. I've not had lawyers and that. I've done it myself, but most people can't do that. I've had some good people around me.
Now, I mean, Lloyds has not got a very good track record, has it? We have, I think it's almost exactly 4 years ago, actually, HBOS, which I believe Lloyds bought, but even that took quite a long time to come to court. We had HBOS bankers, businessmen sentenced to up to 15 years. And this was...
A shame they didn't get the hierarchy that were probably more responsible.
Well, yeah, but I mean, this surely is going to at least send some sign, a positive sign, that these sorts of scams can actually be prosecuted and people can be jailed. I mean,
because what happened, Tony, is the ones that went to jail, if you look what Nick Johns put in the newspapers, he said, this is how it was, this is how it should have been. Well, that's a load of rubbish. Because if you look at a large banking risk structure and you put Nick Johns' explanations in, they don't work. You get red flags still come up. And I would imagine people like that could perhaps get away with sort of 4 to 10 million and get away with it. But then, you know, not £1 billion.
Yeah. Well, this is a third of a billion, roughly, or £750,000. Sorry, £250,000 in the HBOS scandal. But I wonder, do you think that there's any prospect of getting some convictions here in Bristol?
Well, the HBOS was £845 million, and they only recovered £245 million, and there's probably a lot more than that. Yeah, Bristol is a lot bigger than the HBOS frauds. And you've got a lot of the same players involved with it. You've also got Common Purpose and bits like that. Bristol is a lot bigger. There's some certain gentlemen that pretty much run the BSU units, and they're coming up on most of the files that we've got. You know, you need 5+ cases to show systemic fraud, and that's not difficult to do with some of these guys. And I hope they get banged up a long time. And I hope, you know, I mean, really what should be happening, we know the government is at fault on a lot of this. And if you look at it, you've got, if you look at John Major, one of his senior strategists was Norman Blackwell. He became the chairman of Lloyds Bank. If you look at Blair, two of his close aides, there was Julia Middleton. She was a co-founder of Common Purpose. And Dr. Wendy Peart. Dr. Wendy Peart is the high class lady that had the affair with Lloyd's CEO, Azorio. And it's, you know, when he was going through some rocky patches, as in the press, he was then photographed stepping off a boat hand in hand with his lady friend, Dr. Wendy Peart. She was in the paper a little while back being picked up by one of her MP friends who was a Labour guy. But common purpose goes across the board. It, you know, it can be yellow, blue, red. It's not all politicians. There are good, but politics really isn't what people think it is.
No, it certainly isn't.
If you then look at Gordon Brown, one of his main advisors was Robin Budenberg. Robin Budenberg is now the chairman of Lloyds Bank. Robin Budenberg is ex-PwC. PwC comes up an awful lot in this sort of
amazing thing, isn't it? There seems to be a handful of these firms. I do wonder if you've got KPMG auditing PricewaterhouseCoopers and the other way around as well, that they're just doing each other's dodgy accounts for each other. But look, I mean, what was going on in Reading at the Lloyds case was particularly nasty, wasn't it? With the sex bribes and things going on, prostitutes, holidays with prostitutes, this sort of thing. And what the judge in that case, Martin Beddow, he said one of these people that went down had sold his soul for sex, for luxury trips with and without your wife, for bling and for swank. Yeah, I mean, do you think that's what's going on here?
Tony, what you've got to do, what you've got to realise is that's only part of what happened at HBOS. We now know from the evidence we've got that it goes a lot higher and a lot bigger. That's the pretty scandalous side and so on. You know, none of this could have happened at HBOS Reading without a lot of higher people. You know, people like Crosby, how did he get off? You know, the other thing is you've got revolving doors. It's old news. The yachts, the sex, the rest of it, it's old news.
And but have you got any evidence this sort of thing's going on at Castle Park or with the people there?
I think you'll find it's more a case of there were investment bankers at Lloyds, not old-fashioned type bankers, and they overspent. HBOS got it very wrong, and Gordon Brown pushed with Darling for it to be bought by Lloyds. Lloyds took it, and there was lies about its financial state. It was in worse state.
I know one of the things you've done is you've put together this matrix. Can you tell us about that? Because that seems to have been helping your case rather.
Yeah, the matrix is brilliant. It's a crystal ball. We started with an A4 sheet of paper, me and the forensic accountant, and now the matrix, when we last finished it, it's about 6-7 foot wide by about 4 to 5 foot deep. And at that point, we got a feel for what was going on. It's like common purpose. Common purpose involved, but then another thing come along called Big Society. That was another Cameron push. Cameron is a big push on common purpose, as was Clegg. And if you look at Cameron, one of his biggest donors was Lord Lupton. Lord Lupton in 2014 was taking a lot of distressed assets through his private bank, Greenhill & Co. For instance, Project Avon, $540 million realisation, and he took it at 34.3% below value. And then they refinanced it 144% loan to value and sold it on to Cerberus. Now, there's a lot of people, there was a lot of houses in that. There's a lot of people that lost their homes and so on. Lord Lupton's got a very nice fortress in Spain. You probably need it. But these people, they just don't give a toss. And what should happen to them is going to a cell.
Yeah, so hang on, though, because the matrix is surely the purpose of that is all these people do everything they possibly can to remain faceless and nameless. They certainly wouldn't speak to me. And so what you're able to do there is to see where names crop up again and again. Yep. You can see who's relating to who. And you can actually put together the fraud remotely.
Yep, which is what we've done. So what the matrix has done, and like I say, Lord Lupton connects with Cameron. Lord Lupton sits on the board at Lloyds. If you go on from, you know, yes, it all links up. Yeah, the matrix. So what we did, we started with a few names that we knew on various cases. We plotted them. The internet is a wonderful thing, so you can do an awful lot of research on Companies House, Wiki, LinkedIn, etc., government websites, and you can say, oh, that person connects there, and you put all their links on it, and then you start, oh, there's that person, and they start cropping up. So, for instance, what it allowed us to do early days, we kept thinking, why are the police not doing anything? We know there's fraud there. And then we found that John Smith, who is the Deputy Police Crime Commissioner, and what a joke, John Smith was at Burgess Salmon. So we looked at Burgess Salmon and we found Guy Stobart. Guy Stobart was the MD there.
This is in Bristol, here in Bristol, is it?
In Bristol, Guy Stobart, one of the firms that was actually hammering away at Lloyds and HBOS, was Kennedy's. So where did Guy Stobart go? He went to Kennedy's and it all stopped. Guy Stobart, very senior at Common Purpose in the Southwest. He then left and that got taken over by Caroline Duckworth, Merchant Venturers. And Caroline Duckworth's husband is Simon Duckworth. Simon Duckworth connects with Barings, which also connects with Lord Lupton again. So then you look a bit closer and then you look at Simon Duckworth and he's on no end, or he was on no end, of police boards.
Yeah, so who do you think are the organisations or the individuals, the spiders in the middle of the web?
So I think people like Antonio Horta-Azzurro and Norman Blackwell, I think they're on the lower tables. And I think on the upper tables, you probably have got the Lord Luptons. You've probably got the Robin Budenbergs. You know, if it was a wedding, they'd be sitting next to the groom and bride. You know, they're more the brains running things. And it, like I say, what Mr. Budenberg has done by coming back as the chair of Lloyds Bank, he's just put himself back in the frame.
Yeah, there's something a bit surreal about this, Trevor, in that, you know, you as the victims have pulled together a whole load of evidence. And I'm thinking about you know, somebody like Roger Cook from the Cook Report here. You're pulling together a whole load of evidence yourself about criminal activity, which, if it was put before a court, put before a jury by the police, would almost certainly convict people. And yet the police seem to be sort of twiddling their thumbs by the sidelines, unwilling to do their job.
Yeah. Well, it's, as I said to Anthony Stansfield, I don't think Nick Johns has got promotion to where he is by being the most intelligent detective in the UK. So I think, with Common Purpose, I'm not saying that Nick Johns is Common Purpose. We researched him heavily and couldn't see that he was, but there were people above him, such as Francis Hapgood, who was the chief, who was Common Purpose graduate. But, you know, I think with Common Purpose, they say they have a lot of useful idiots. And the other thing they have is beyond authority. And I think a lot of that happens. So a lot of people...
Hang on. What do you mean by that, beyond authority? That sounds almost like above the law.
Well, beyond authority is doing outside your remit, isn't it? So when I reported, and believe me, the stuff that I reported, it was all checked off by police lawyers and so on. And when I we asked for a meeting by the crime panel, an extraordinary meeting, and there were some good people on the crime panel, and they supported it. And Richard Brown... did everything he could to stop that. So they, it was going to go ahead, and then him and Patricia Jones wrote saying that it now wouldn't go ahead. And they can't do that because we're reporting live crime, and we're saying that Sue Mount Stevens, Andy Marsh, and the economic crime team are perverting the course of justice and they're assisting the criminals. So it would be like saying we've got a neighbour who keeps running outside his door with a shotgun saying that next Wednesday he's going to go and blow the guy's head off at the petrol station that's seen his wife. Well, the police couldn't turn around and say, oh, no, we're not going to deal with that now. We're going to deal with it. We might do something on gun crime April next year. You know, you can't do that. If somebody reports crime, they've got to deal with it. And when you've got a crime panel going out of their way to block it, you know, I won't say a bunch of cowboys because there were some good people on there, but most of the good people on it resigned and left because they were disgusted with Mount Stevens, Marsh, and the Muppet Show.
That's right. I noticed that there were vacancies for the non-execs on the on the police and crime panel here in Avon and Somerset. Yeah, can you just summarise, do you think, maybe one or two people here in Bristol who are involved in the criminal justice system, and one sort or another, give us their names and why you think that, that we should, as members of the public and journalists, be looking into them?
Well, it's the main people in leadership. I mean, our route, what I saw 4 years ago, like I say, I look for cracks in legislation and law and that sort of thing. And the easiest route we were ever going to sort this out was, the police route, because, there's good and bad in everything. There's good judges, there's bad judges, but in the police force, there's good and bad. You're just particularly unlucky in Avon Somerset because you've had a 30 years run of a lot of people not doing what they should be for the wrong people. But probably rather than mention any more names, I've said Sue Mount Stevens, that's quite out in the open. She's, they've ruined our lives by not doing what they should be. And as you quite rightly say, us as victims shouldn't have to do this. But we are. It's just so happens it used to be part of my day job, looking at this sort of thing. So it's
well, yeah, you're alleging that this network, in fact you've said talked about common purpose, there may be others involved, are really it may even be to the extent of crimes like malfeasance, which is misconduct in public office, which is up to life in jail.
Yeah, so you've got, and it's not going to be everybody who's common purpose. Some people are going to be genuine people and don't have a clue what's going on. All we can say is a lot of the people that appear to be quite senior or well-placed. Also, it's about going after money. You know, if you look at the senior leadership, if you go up very high with people that handle budgets and that sort of thing in Somerset, you might want to search some of those against the words common purpose in quote marks, and you will find some people that are very senior are ex-common purpose graduates. So what I'm saying is, I'm not saying it's everybody in common purpose, but, it seems to be a good fair share of people wearing a common purpose tufty badge that seem to be coming up in the matrix.
I mean, what you're describing is almost as if organised crime is actually on the wrong side of the criminal justice system. So they're running the criminal justice system rather than subject to it.
Tony, we got some paperwork when we were researching all this, and we got heavy into researching the common purpose. In 2008, in the House of Commons, there is a quote in there that says, blah, 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 common purpose, ba-bomb. And it relates to making fraud low priority. That's 2008. If we then look at the other paper we got from Alistair Darling, and it's out there on the web. It's well hidden, but it's out there. And it's 2008, 2009. So were people in Parliament and some of these big bankers planning this? And this is the way that we can get out of the big hole that we've created. And we will asset strip. If we look at the police, the City of London Police is run by the Corporation of London. The Corporation of London Square Mile runs on votes. And the bigger the business you are, the more staff, the more you say you have on how the corporation runs. The corporation runs City of London Police. The City of London Police run actionless fraud. And that decides nationally what will and won't get allocated. If you look at the Academy for the City of London Police on economic crime, it partners with the Bank of England and so on. But, Karen Baxter, the commander for City of London, she was in a meeting a few years back with Nikki, the Conservative Treasury Select. And not once did either of them mention bits like SME Alliance with 300 victims of alleged fraud. The conversation went with Karen Baxter, the commander. Well, we work with the banks, et cetera, et cetera. And I think they do work.
Well, maybe they work for the banks even. But, I mean, it sounds to me as if what you're saying there is that after the 2008 so-called financial crisis, which was really more of a snatch and grab raid. One of the biggest the world has ever seen, actually. That the signal went out that fraud was okay because this might help the banking system stay afloat, even though they had this enormous bailout from the public too.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is, on the modus operandi, what Lloyds did, they set up, I mean, they learnt from Acorn and they learnt from Commercial First. And if they want to send me lawyers' letters, they're more than welcome to. I've got enough evidence here probably to sink them. Or definitely the BSU part. That's if Lloyds is solvent anyway. But what Lloyds did, they upscaled the operation and they set up 9-10 BSU units around the UK. And they would use a range of offering people funding. The funding wouldn't come through, or they'd alter contracts so people would collapse. And then what would then happen? The managers in the BSUs around the country, there was also quite a few secondees brought in, but the people would then get defaulted to Bristol. And Bristol is the abattoir. I mean, the other thing they would do, some of the cases we've got, I'm quite privileged because I've got 60 cases here.
Trevor, you've got to explain that comment. What do you mean by that?
Which bit?
Bristol is the abattoir. What do you mean?
Bristol is the abattoir, so businesses would be sent there to be sunk. They'd put high fees against the businesses and then put in valuers or drive-by valuations at below value. And then when they go to court, people are so distraught that they would say to the judge, they'd say, well, look, my lord, you've given these people another 3 months. They've not come good. And they now owe us these hundreds of thousands of pounds and their property is only worth this. So there's hardly anything there. So we need you to rubber stamp a repossession, my lord. But the thing is, the banks would be concealing the evidence and so on. The abattoir Bristol, you know, it's an extension of what was happening with Acorn and Commercial First and another instance. So I've told you what happened with a lot of the farmers. If it was somebody that had portfolio, which is a different type of business, but it's property again, someone might have 10, 20, 30 properties. And the banks would typically have agreements in place to lend at 50% loan to value or 70% loan to value. And what they would do, they would perhaps encourage people to go to a limit and then alter the percentages. And then what they would do, some of their managers or manageresses, I can think in one case, a lady called Rachel, and what they would do, they would then return payments. And so somebody that was on perhaps 70% loan to value, the bank would return the payment, it would take them over the 70% loan to value, and they'd take the whole lot. Now, we also know that from our research that they're also doing audit fraud, because it's, if I give you an example, if as an example, I won't mention any names. If there was a victim that had a portfolio worth, say, 3 and a bit million. If they were running on, say, 70% loan to value. If they got defaulted, then their 30% would have been, say, 900,000. Well, it's impossible for someone like that. By the time you take the estate agent fees, and don't forget these percentages are based on what the bank's valuers have gone in before at, and typically in a rising market. So that, you know, it should be that the person's doing even better. But it's impossible if somebody had like 900,000 and lost 12, 13, 15 properties. If you took the estate agent's fees, which is my background, if you took the lawyer fees, even if you gave them the same amount, which would be quite generous, fixed rate LPA receivers, you know, it's impossible to reach over 100,000 on that scenario. So in the example I'm giving you, which is quite close to one of our cases, how the hell could somebody end up with a £200,000 debt when there would only be about £100,000 to come off of 900. So therefore, it's got to be false bookkeeping, which you've got to ask what the auditor's looking at. And then that has to be signed off on an annual return, which is Form 20F. And that's signed off by the CEO and the CFO to the best of their knowledge. So what they're signing off is fraudulently to say this is correct.
Well, it sounds to me like they're piling fraud upon fraud upon fraud. But anyway, maybe something will be done about this. Who knows? Maybe there'll be a few collars felt like there were in Reading. And we've got these police and crime commissioner election coming up, delayed for a year. So Sue Mount-Stevens got her free year without being elected. The unelected police and crime commissioner for Avon and Somerset. And I noticed we've got some, we've got a whole list of candidates standing. We've got a chap called Mark Shelford, who's the Conservative candidate. Just run through them. We've got Mark Shelford for the Conservatives, Kerry Barker for Labour. We've got Cleo Lake for the Greens, Heather Shearer for the Lib Dems, and John Smith as an independent. So can you just take us through, some of those candidates, what you know of and who you think might actually do something and who definitely won't do anything to pursue this case further and to actually get some of these Lloyds people into court?
So I have spoke to Heather. I spoke to Heather the other week and she sat on the crime panel.
So this is Heather Shearer from the Lib Dems, yeah?
Heather Shearer. I'm told Heather is quite a nice lady. I did say that us victims were a bit disgusted that more wasn't done, and she understood that. And I said perhaps we're keep in touch. The I have spoken to Mark Shelford, and Mark has assured me that if he gets in, he's going to have a clean sweep. So I think if there's any bent coppers out there, please hang about to hopefully be behind bars. If not, you best go out of UK jurisdiction. Because
what about this guy, John Smith, the former Deputy Police and Crime Commissioner, the independent standing?
Well, just going over again. So I think Mark would do a very, very good job. And we will soon be passing some evidence to him, along with MPs and Mr. Stansfield over at Thames Valley. And I've also spoke quite in depth with Kerry Barker. Kerry was a criminal barrister. I've shown him on a double Zoom a lot of what we've got. I pointed out 2006 Fraud Act, 68 Theft Act, bait and switch. And Kerry said, "You've missed conspiracy to defraud." I said, I didn't get that far. I was going to say it, but so the good thing is, and again, we're going to be passing over a lot of records to Kerry. So if Kerry gets in or Mark get in, they are going to, we will hold them to account. We will protest in their meetings. But the thing is, they both sound quite decent chaps. And, we wouldn't be passing evidence over to them. I've got about 1,700 pages that will go to them, which is 60 victims' cases, and we've got another 20 on top of that. They will also be going to Priti Patel because she's ultimately responsible under the Police Reform Social Responsibility Act for the success and failure. And sadly, it's the failure of the police.
Well, I wouldn't hold your breath with Priti Patel, Trevor.
Well, I'm afraid she hasn't got a choice. Like I say, the thing I used to do, I used to look at cracks in legislation. So I don't care what people say. I know what the legislation and regulation says, and I know what the Bill of Rights says and the separation of powers. You've also got contempt of Parliament, and, Parliament is sovereign. It's above the square mile legislation, and it has to protect the British people. People have just forgotten that. The law is there if people actually use it. And I'm afraid this is one that we've got overwhelming evidence, and it will be passed to the Cabinet, and it will be passed to Priti Patel. And if she doesn't deal with it, then as happened with Matt Hancock, we will then look to take the matter further. But I hope Priti Patel would do the right thing. Priti Patel also, in the 2014, in a Westminster debate, she knew about this. She commented about it. She's got knowledge of circumstance and in her position. At the time, she was Secretary to the Exchequer. And she said, I'll give you the words she said. She wrote this to one of our victims and said it in the debate. She said, "As you know, I would I said I'd refer this to the government department that is best placed to look into this matter. She commented about the Avon Somerset police failure and that sort of thing. She then said, my officials have engaged closely with the Home Office, which considers questions around fraud. I understand the Home Office has agreed to look into this in more detail. That was 6 years ago. So she now sits on the main seat. So we're going to say, well, how did that work out? So the thing is, she is responsible. She can't run away from this, and hopefully...
I understand. I mean, let's hope she doesn't. Anyway, look, Sue Mount-Stevens stood as an independent, even though she was not entirely independent of the establishment, being married to one of the chairs of Business West. But John Smith is standing as an independent. He's the former Deputy Police and Crime Commissioner.
Yeah. So I think Mark and Kerry... either of them would make splendid police crime commissioners. And I think we've seen what happens when crooks run the police force and the crime commissioner's office. So is John Smith a crook? I'd say yes, John Smith is a crook.
Well, why do you say that?
Because of all the evidence I've got. Like I say, I've been in property for many, many years, and I've had 10 years consulting to government on property fraud and money laundering. And I've had 5-6 years looking at many of the victims' cases. John Smith is a crook. And if he wants to see me in court, please see me in court, Mr. Smith, because I've got overwhelming evidence here. And I think the other big thing, especially, I think the court wouldn't go very nicely on him because he was a lawyer. He was at Burgess Salmon.
In what way Burgess Salmon and him actually, you think, implicit in some of this fraud then?
Well, like I say, we've got a lot of evidence here, and there's things I can say at the moment, things I can't say, but I really don't think that some of the people that we've been talking about would like this anywhere near a courtroom.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? And fascinating that he has the audacity to stand as police and crime commissioner if he's been very close to some of the people committing frauds.
If you want to cover something up, then, like I say, the trick that they normally do is try and take control. And, you know, I've seen a lot. I'm in Kent, but I've seen an awful lot what people say about Mrs. Mount-Stevens and Mr. Smith, and you know, a lot of the comments I've got to agree with.
Well, Sue is not standing for re-election, and we've just heard this week that the Chief Constable Andy Marsh has had enough too.
Yep, good. Another bad egg that needs going. You know, totally corrupt. Totally corrupt. I mean, I've got paperwork here and a lot of their predecessors. I know there wasn't an earlier crime commissioner. Look, going back to Common Purpose hijacks budgets. The policing budget when the crime commissioners come in was $8 billion for the UK. You know, the other thing is you've got misappropriation of funds. And what we've got evidence of is we've got evidence that Avon and Somerset Police have covered up criminal fraud. You know, we've got letters here that say there's not enough evidence to go on. I've got a letter here that mentions Nick Gargan has made that decision on some bits. We've got Andy Smith letters.
So he's the former Chief Constable.
Yeah, he's the former Chief Constable. I've got tons of letters here from the victims. And when you bring all the bits together, it's you know, the picture on the puzzle becomes very clear. But John Smith needs to try and get in to keep the frauds covered up. I mean, it's a bit concerning that when you even look at the mayor, and I put a thing on Twitter, the mayor is in with a company called Plimsoll, which is Productions. And they make some quite good TV. But the thing is, that mayor knows, because I know other victims we've got have written about Lloyds. And on the board of that company is LDC. You know, the mayor's aware of it, and he's not getting off of it. He's not even coming back to us to say, tell me more. That's a bit concerning, because a lot of these people involved in big, big budgets of your county. And you've really got to say, where's the money go? I mean, on the police, you've not only got the Avon Somerset Police covering up criminal fraud, the law lords, we can say that now. It's not alleged on those cases. You know, the law lords have made their decision. they're higher than normal High Court judges. And I've got paperwork here that relates to those cases from Law Police Farce that says not enough evidence and so on. Well, there was enough for the judges. Maybe they'd just open their eyes. But the other thing is, you've got the audacity that Sue Mount-Stevens and John Smith misled us victims into thinking there were going to be an independent investigation. And it wasn't. It was another whitewash. It was a false flag. And you've then got the fact that Thames Valley, and Anthony Stansfield is a brilliant guy. He's totally straight. But you've really got to say, why did Nick Johns not do better with Operation Hornet? And they've then brought him into Avon the Somerset to do the review there. And he has done a whitewash cover-up of the cover-up of Avon the Somerset. What brilliant way to spend the taxpayer money.
Okay, anyway, look, what's the best way to follow this? And also, I suppose, if people also listening feel that they may have been victims that you haven't spoken to, or maybe we should call people survivors. I mean, not all of them survive, but I know, you know, as people start getting together, along with you, Trevor, then they start to rekindle the will to live after having been totally fleeced by these people. And losing their farms, losing their businesses, their entire life's work, etc., to gratify these people. What's the best place to follow your work and contact you if they want to?
Well, at the moment, I'm a little bit underground, so doing this interview is not normally what I do. But we're very close now, and we've reached a stage where a lot of what we've done is in safe places, so it's not too bad. But I will really be undercover for, a little bit longer and so on. We just need to get to the next stage, and we're really not far from it now and so on. But we have got a website. We've got Action for Justice. You can find it on Facebook, Action for Justice Lloyd's Victims. People can find me on Facebook. They can find me on Twitter.
Just to say, that's Action for Justice with a number 4.co.uk.
Yeah.
Okay, Trevor Mealham, thanks very much for joining us. And actually, before we go, if you wanted to put your cross next to one police and crime commissioner to finally get this sorted, who's your best bet rather than, telling us various that you've spoken to? Because this is really such an important case, it would be lovely to think that we could, in the next few years, put a finish to this.
I think I would go for either Mark or Kerry. I'm gonna spread my bet there. Whoever gets in of those two would be more than competent to do it. You've got a chap with 50 years judiciary experience as a criminal barrister. And the other one was in the army and worked with many police forces. So whether it's blue or whether it's red, I don't really care so much. All I care about is, whoever does get in, sorts this mess out. We would like to see people behind bars, and that includes police, people in police crime commissioner offices, because of what they've put people through. I've had... just before we finish there, in 4 years, I've had 27 families come through where people have contacted us that have been suicidal. So, I could have taken this report that I was leaked, and I could have probably knocked on Lloyd's door before Christmas and tried to reach some settlement. And I won't do that. I can face police. I can face judges. I can face these crooks. And that's fine. The thing I can't do is walk out on the victims. So, we're gunning for all the victims. The crooks need to start thinking about who they're going to throw under the bus, like happened with HBOS Reading, because the evidence is there. It's overwhelming, and it's only a matter of time. It's a case of when. The evidence is there now. We've passed files already to Anthony Stansfield. Of recent, and that there's more to go to other people.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, that Noel Edmonds, the TV guy, actually did decide he wanted to settle out of court. Yeah. So this is what Lloyd's are trying to do is to identify who their main resistors to their fraud are, and then and take them outside and settle out of court. But you said you won't do that. Do you know any of the details of what Noel actually got from them? I mean, was it a reasonable settlement? Do you know?
I don't know what Noel got. I've only got a release from it. I used to talk to Noel, and good luck to him. He raised the profile of it for a while, but you know, it left a lot of victims still trying to fight it. You know, I can't blame him because I know what the victims go through. But the trouble is, I don't like losing, so I'm not going to lose. And at the moment, we've got 60 odd victims. There's a list of another 20. If Lloyds want to come and talk to us, they need to think about settling with all our victims. But they also need to think, you know, who they're going to throw under the bus. I can't be bought off. The only way I'm going to leave this is take a busload of victims with me.
Okay, and the website again is www.action4justice.co.uk. Trevor Mealham, thanks very much for joining us again.
Thanks, Tony.